fighting for America.
The USA Freedom Act makes clear the government cannot indiscriminately acquire Americans' call detail records.
This legislation still allows the government to collect everything they want against Americans.
Fighting for Idaho.
It is important that our veterans don't become another political football.
We've not just let them down, we've let them die. This is awful stuff. Somebody ought to be held accountable for it.
Fighting for you.
52.5% are not in favor of the bike lane.
The cyclists don't follow the law. They ride in an unsafe fashion. They don't pay their way.
Boise's bike lane pilot project will continue at least for another week and a half.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the morning.
Only in America.
On 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
And good morning, Kay Millie in the morning, 580 KIDO. Thank you all for joining us. We appreciate it. Phone numbers, you know them, 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Joining us now is a young lady that we tried to have on at one time, but technical difficulties got in the way. And we go now to Joy Brighton, who joins us to talk about Sharia law in America. Her book, Shariaism, is here. Joy, good to have you with us.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm glad we finally connected here.
I know. So let's talk a little bit about a Hollywood landmark that has Jay Leno and Ellen DeGeneres up in arms.
Yes, the Beverly Hills Hotel. The Beverly Hills Hotel is part of a group of hotels that is owned by the Sultan of Brunei, who recently imposed Sharia law on his country. And as we all know, Sharia law... The foundation of Sharia law is that anyone who is not of the faith of Islam should be killed. Anyone who converts away should be killed. Women are the property of men. Those kinds of things. Control, control, control. And so when Hollywood got a hold of this, they suddenly were up in arms and they've been protesting the Beverly Hills Hotel. Which is, I mean, it's fantastic that finally, you know, Hollywood is waking up to this idea that Sharia law is a big problem around the globe. And, you know, my book, which is Shariaism is Here, is about, yes, it's happening in Brunei, and it's also happening in the United States. And we need to focus on what's happening in the United States, because if we can't say no to Shariaism in the United States, how can we go trotting around the globe trying to help other people?
That's a good point at 580KIDO, Joy. So how in the world can Sharia law be in America?
Crazy. Well, one of the things is, let's just talk about women and abusive women. And, you know, in this country, one of the things that's happening is that when new immigrants come to this country from anywhere, they often take their cultures and traditions with them. In the case of some of these folks coming from Sudan or Somalia, from Pakistan, these men, okay, are taking the tradition with them of control. And that means that these have been centuries and centuries of, this is a generation and a cult, this is culture of patriarchal control. These men are used to control and used to abusing their women, and they're bringing, not all of them, many are fleeing Sharia law, but many of these men are coming to this country and imposing the same kind of control on their wives as they did back home. We have women living in Iowa, in Illinois, in California, in New Jersey. In fact, across 47 states, there's reports of forced marriages. And I would say that there's probably, depending on this, there's not a lot of statistics, but it looks like we can safely say there's at least 1,000 a year of young girls or women being sent overseas to their native Somalia, Sudan, Pakistan, marrying a relative that they never met before, an older guy, bringing him home. Now he's an American citizen, and she is now living under the thumb of someone who is, I would say, a control bully, which I'm going to call a Shariaist, so someone who lives by the law of Sharia.
And this is going on in America. Don't we have laws against this?
Well, we have laws against a lot of things. They're not often enforced, are they? You know, one of the problems with this is that it's under the radar screen. And, you know, Americans, or let's just say some Americans, I think the people on your show understand it, really just don't want to take a look at this. They want to say that this is religion. They want to say that this is culture. Even the shelters that these women are fleeing to don't want to talk about the fact that there is a problem specifically – with women, with Muslim women, that these are the women who, in very high numbers, are starting to show up in shelters and starting to say that we have real issues of abuse.
And the men aren't prosecuted?
You know, these girls are very, very afraid. As you can imagine, they live under the thumb of someone who believes that they should be controlled, who believes they should control everyone, including their daughters, including their wives. So these women are very, very afraid. There is, there's a few examples of these women ending up in U.S. courts. And I'll give you probably the most famous example, which would happen to a young girl in New Jersey. She was, it was a forced marriage. She came over to New Jersey when she was about 19, I'm going to say, from Morocco. Her husband repeatedly was raping her. And finally, the neighbors called the police. And she ended up taking this guy to court. With the support of lawyers and neighbors and lots of other people, pro bono, who said, this is not our, you are protected in this country. You must take this issue to court. In court, this was a New Jersey court. The husband said, well, I don't understand this. There is no such thing as rape in my country. A woman has to obey her husband, and that's what my wife is doing, and that's what I demand. And the lower court judge let this guy go, did not impose a marital rape charge. He actually walked away from the sentence because the judge said, well, this, he didn't understand the laws of this land, and this was really part of his culture.
Now, tell that to someone who gets a speeding ticket. Ignorance of the law is not an excuse.
Exactly. And, you know, we have this situation going on in this country where even judges, first of all, they're unaware of really the danger and the brutality of some of these Sharia laws. They don't understand, because it's hard to understand that someone could feel like treat their wife as property, or that they could feel total control, or that they believe that if someone converts away from Islam, they should be killed. It's a different mindset. And so judges aren't educated. They're not willing to believe these things. Fortunately, in this case, some lawyers went to her, appealed it, and on the higher appeals court, it was overturned. And however, he still was not convicted of rape. He was convicted of second-degree something or other, but it wasn't marital rape.
Troy Brighton here with us, Kevin Miller in the Morning, 580 KIDO, talking about Sharia law in America. And we're talking about, you know, all over the country where this is being played out. Are you the only person speaking out against this, Joy?
No. I mean, there are, I happen to be a woman on the left. There's very few of us on the left. I think those of, and this really isn't a left or a right issue.
Now, wait a minute. You're saying you're a lib.
I am.
Well, libs are well.
Are you going to throw me off the tent? Are you going to throw me off now?
You know, you're a very compelling lib. And, you know, we're all about tolerance and diversity here with Kevin Miller. So please go ahead.
There we go. Well, you know, it's, if you're going to be a liberal and you're going to say you're a liberal, well, then how come we're not talking about, you know, a situation or a political movement of control called Shariaism, which denies people individual rights? How could you be a liberal woman and not worry about abuse against women in this country? How could you be a liberal woman and not worry about the fact that people in this country, that we have people who have said that they've converted away from Islam, Wafa Sultan, psychiatrist, very educated woman in California, has been living in hiding for the past 8 years because she got a death fatwa from some sheikh over in Qatar. This is how dangerous this is. It's a death fatwa from someone across the other side of the globe. An educated woman in California goes into hiding. This is how dangerous the situation is.
Well, what, if anything, can be done?
There's a couple of things. We do have, we've got a series of laws that are being passed across the country. Florida just passed this law days ago. And this law is called, I call it a liberty law, because I say, that Sharia is not about about liberty. So if you pass anything that is going to stop Shariaism from coming into this country, it's a liberty law. So a liberty law was passed in Florida, and it says that, you may have heard of it, it's about the eighth state now that has passed this law. And it basically says that in a U.S. court of law, if Sharia law is introduced and is somehow introduced as part of the defense, if what is being debated, okay, is contradictory to our U.S. Constitution, then the state constitution overrules, which sounds ridiculous that we need to have a law that says, hey, everybody, the state constitution, that's to be the highest law of the state. But we do need it because we need it because U.S. judges are uninformed. And I will say that not every Sharia law actually is a contradiction. There are Sharia laws about business contracts that are perfectly, that are simpatico, I would say, with U.S. contract law. We don't need to worry about that. But when it comes to human rights abuses and individual rights and liberties, there is absolutely nothing compatible with Sharia law and our Constitution.
Joy, if people want more information, what can they do?
Please go to Amazon.com. This book that I wrote is, people call it a book for the John. They say, put it on the back of your toilet. When you go in there, take a look at a few pages. It's
now, wait a minute.
Pictures.
That's maybe what you libs do, but us conservatives, we don't read while we're on the toilet.
What do you guys do?
We do our business and move on.
Okay. Well, this book was designed, it's really a PowerPoint presentation. It's a series of about 65 stories, American news stories in this country that take place between 2008 and 2014. And again, there's a little bit of religion in these stories, and there's a little bit of abuse of power in these stories, and I separated it out, and I said, okay, here's the religion. Islam is a religion protected under freedom of religion, First Amendment. And then there's something called Shariaism, which is the political movement of control. It's the political movement of radical Islam. And that is all political. It's like communism. It must not be protected. We have to start talking about it. We have to start doing something about it. So it really is just a book of lots and lots and lots of news stories, and I pull the two apart because so many people say, well, that's just one little story, and that's another little story. But when you put all the little stories together, you say, wow, we have a problem of Shariaism here in America.
It's a pattern. So, again, go to Amazon, check out the book. We'd love to have you back, Joy.
I'd love to be back.
All right.
If you'll have a lib back again.
We love the libs.
Okay, well, thanks for having me, Kevin.
Have a good day.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. What an outstanding guest, and here she is, a lib, talking about the voices of...
Getting more done before sunrise than anyone. Kevin Miller in the morning on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
KIDO, Kevin Miller in the morning as we continue on. Phone number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Joining us now, though, is the CEO of Cap Wealth Advisors, Tim Pagliara. Tim, good to have you with us again, sir.
Yeah, good morning, Kevin.
You know, we've kind of been lost in The Voice and American Idol in our own primaries here in Idaho. What's the latest concerning the future of Fannie and Freddie?
Well, the Senate had their vote in their markup process, and voted 13-9 to advance the bill out of their committee, and it will be up to Harry Reid now whether it goes to the floor of the United States Senate for a full vote this fall. They had originally predicted they'd get 16-18 votes, and as they got towards the – they had to delay the markup a couple of times, and as they got down to the final vote, 13-9, it reflected the confusion and a lot of the disagreement that existed within the Senate committee itself.
How does this play out on a partisan stage if this vote comes to the full Senate?
I describe it as bipartisan confusion right now, because it is kind of fascinating that it has not really fallen on either party line. You would think the Republicans would be dramatically opposed to it because it violates, in the opinion of a number of legal scholars and the constitutional cases, challenges. It violates the Constitution. It's an unconstitutional taking. Beyond that, then you get into the disagreement and confusion about the future of housing reform and the specifics of the Crapo-Johnson bill. And what has emerged, at least at this early stage of the debate, and it wasn't much of a debate, is that their plan will lead to higher mortgage rates and less availability of 30-year mortgage financing.
And yet it continues on. Are they counting on this confusion to kind of muddy the waters?
Well, you know, now it gets into the political strategy. Harry Reid may want to just bring this to the floor of the Senate, knowing he doesn't like it, knowing that it'll fail. Two of the members of the committee, actually Tim Johnson, I believe, is retiring, and Tom Coburn is retiring. They both voted for the plan. So you go into this fall, you know, lame duck type of session. It gets voted down. Well, then next year, depending upon the composition of the Senate, it has to reemerge. So it's an opportunity, really, I think, for the people that want to do housing reform to take a step back and try and get it right. There is no question Congress has the authority to dissolve Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. They just have to follow the law. And the Heritage Foundation published a very short, really good synopsis of this just a couple of days ago. And, you know, that is the crux of the matter is they have to follow the law. And they can't – everything that they're going to try and accomplish with reform, if they do this like a banana republic, if they just take shareholder assets, they will not attract private sector capital back into this new system.
Right, because who would do that after being burned?
Exactly, and that's the point. And the really awful part about this is that it continues to distort the federal budget deficit. There's $235 billion that the Obama administration has siphoned out of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and every time you hear the president say, well, our budget deficit is going in the right direction, things have improved, they've stolen $235 billion out of these two companies, and they put it in the black hole of the federal budget deficit. They still hold the $187 billion that they borrowed on the books. So the next president or somebody is going to have to account for that. And when they do, that $187 billion comes back. And if the courts rule, as I think they will, that this is an unconstitutional taking, then the shareholders will have to get paid back to the extent that there are that they have claims. So this is they're allowing the Obama administration to have a hall pass here. When we should be focused on the deficit. And I did some math before we got started today, and you remember the Simpson-Bowles Commission?
Yes.
The Simpson-Bowles Commission had a higher percentage vote for that bill that, and on the commission, the President's Commission on Fiscal Responsibility and Reform, than Crapo Johnson. And they never were allowed to go to the floor of the United States Senate. So it shows you what, you know, a few senators can do when they want to do something, when they have to take on the tough issues of the federal budget deficit, make tough choices. They can't do that. They won't even open that up for a debate on the floor of the Senate.
Tim, let's take a look at the broader question of the housing market. If mortgage prices go up, if the American dream is frittled away, hard to believe a couple of weeks or a couple of years ago, Time Magazine said, is the American dream over? Home markets like here in the Treasure Valley and across the country have rebounded. If Fannie and Freddie go away, does that mean that the American dream goes away? Mortgages are not so easily attainable. Heck, you look at the paperwork now and it's double what it used to be to buy a home.
It is. And while all this was going on, Mel Watt, who's now the director of the Federal Housing Finance Administration, which has oversight for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, he had a press conference last week and laid out his vision for correcting the problems that exist within Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And, you know, for your listeners, Mel Watt's not that smart of a guy. But he's smart enough to listen to the executives and the people that are running Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac that have the solutions to these problems. And I was impressed that he actually was listening. And while all this nonsense is going on in the House and the Senate, he's trying to solve the problems. And he demonstrated that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac actually can deal with these issues, protect the interests of the American taxpayer, and at the same time, keep the American dream alive through low-cost, affordable housing, long-term fixed-rate housing rates, you know, for the American consumer. So there are things going on in the background that are very positive, despite the fact of, you know, the ugliness that goes on in the debate in the Senate.
Well, Tim, where do we go from here?
Well, I think it's a great opportunity for your listeners to, you know, go back to Senator Crapo and say, hey, we recognize that you have to follow the rule of law. And if you truly want to reform the housing industry, if you want more private capital, then you're going to have to honor the rule of law. And you have to take that seriously as a condition before you do anything else. And then I have said all along that the solutions to the housing problem and then the mess that we got into, they exist within Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. These are the best, brightest people in the industry. They've forgotten more about than what comes out of a Senate committee. And they need to bring them to the forefront. Let them talk. Let them come up with their solutions. And open up this debate. They've been silenced up to this point in time. They were actually required to be quiet as part of the conservatorship in 2008. And so they've got a lot of good ideas, and I think that is what we can do going forward, because this bill is going nowhere. It will fail on the floor of the United States Senate, even if it makes it there this fall, and it's doubtful whether it'll even make it to the floor.
Well, Tim, as always, we appreciate your time, sir.
All right.
Bye-bye. You're listening to Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
Don Hannity, weekday afternoons at 3 on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Men, 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 manly men, 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 manly men, men, men.
Men, 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 manly men.
Men, 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 manly men.
You know, I was just singing along with that song so well, I could keep going with it. Good morning, Dave.
I didn't hear a word out of you.
Well, that was probably a good thing.
I'm just struggling this morning.
You're struggling.
I forgot my breakfast.
Well, I hate it when that happens.
What do you eat for? You know, I've never seen you. I've seen you with noodle soup or something.
Yes.
What do you eat for breakfast?
Well, I will tell you, I go to, I usually go to the Jacksons here, and we go to that young man who, I can't remember his name, but I can't really say much because he knows that I talk about him, the guy with the nails.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he's there, or some other young, lovely young women are there, and I come in, and I have a double chocolate cookie and usually some ramen noodles. Now, we all know that the ramens are the soup of death, because when I was doing three or four of them, it spiked my blood pressure so much that we had to go on medication and everything else.
That would be a cup of salt.
Yes. So I'm down to one of those a day, and the cookies. But today I did something different. I decided, am I doing this out of need or am I doing this out of habit? Need, habit. Now, this is thrilling for you listening at 580 KIDO.
It is.
And I decided I was going to pass going to the Jacksons just because I wanted extra time to speak with you today about the incredible time I had yesterday at Sage International Charter School in Boise. It was something that I'll never forget.
Nice. Photos are up, by the way, at 580kido.com.
Photos are up, and what really struck me is, and, you know, I'm an American guy, but if you're buying into the global economy and the international baccalaureate program, then this is your school, and the only other school like it in the country. You have to pay $41,000 a year in New York. And this school has gotten a lot of local attention lately. So, it was great that we could swing in there. I want to thank Ray and Maya for making that happen. Certainly our great friends at CapEd. But it was a experience that I'll never forget.
Nice. Well, welcome back to the studios.
Great to be in the studio. Great to be here. For the listening audience, we have an incredible show lined up for everybody today, as opposed to the usual, which is a lot of me.
Mm-hmm.
Our friend Nagmaid Abedini will join us.
Give us an update what's happening there.
Yeah, always a pleasure to speak with her. I wish it were under better conditions.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about the gays. We will have former state senator, former candidate for Congress, Nicole Lefevre, will join us. We'll talk about the recent victories that the gay rights movement have had. Also about AdWords. Well, and defeats. Idaho still holding strong. And I will ask her.
Ain't no plans with a man. This is the 80s and I'm down with the ladies.
No, I won't ask her that, but I will ask her if it is acceptable to say the gays, or is that a derogatory term?
Boy, I tell you, you know, I was...
And I forgot, Sheriff Rainey will join us.
Ah, good. So he can put you in cuffs and haul you away for the weekend. Which, by the way, there will be...
Why would you say that?
I'm just giving you a bad time. There will be enforced patrols this weekend, looking for drunk drivers and drunk boaters.
Drunk voters?
Boaters.
Boaters.
People out on the water drinking. Not good to do. But you get a lot of people sometimes, they think, I would never drive drunk, but I'll operate my boat drunk. And I don't know if you... I guess you say piloting a boat. Do you pilot a boat? I guess you do.
You're a captain.
Yes, but...
I'd love to be a captain of the boat, and then I'd marry people.
Okay, Captain Stubby, we appreciate that. That'll be good.
It wouldn't be the love boat.
Would not?
No.
Okay. So, yeah, big Memorial Day weekend coming up. A lot of people, a three-day weekend. So they'll get a little bit of a break before we head in. This is the official start of summer.
Really?
Yep. This will be it. But it's so early this year, school's still in session for a lot of places.
Right.
So, you know, I always remember for me growing up back in the Stone Age, Memorial Day weekend, that Friday, that was the last day of school. And then you were done until fall. But now they go get a 3-day break and then they go back, I think, for a week. I went to a graduation last night.
Right.
Yesterday afternoon.
That's funny. You just started going and I didn't even ask you a question. That was brilliant.
I know. I'm just taking over. You're back having a cup of coffee, relaxing.
No, I was processing the Memorial Day school. Then you go, I went to a graduation last night.
Oh my goodness,
that was pretty good.
They are agonizing.
Yeah,
I mean, it started at 3:30 in the afternoon, and we were there until almost 7 for 10 seconds of action. Oh my goodness, it's like, oh, thank goodness for smartphones. That's all I got to say. I was able to do work. I was texting you. I was cleaning out email. Wow. It's a long time to sit there for 10 seconds of excitement.
But it means so much.
It's to the graduate?
Yeah.
Well, our graduate that was involved there couldn't wait for it to get over, so he'd get out and get on with his life.
Look, getting on with your life is overrated.
Well, tell that to an 18-year-old.
Look, kid, it's like Rodney Dangerfield said in Back to School, stay home with your parents as much as possible.
Well, yeah, but they don't see that at 18.
Why? Well, they're so busy to get their own car, then they have a car payment. They're so busy to get a house, then they have a house payment.
They already got a car. Most kids have cars already. It's not like you and I when we used to walk. Yeah, not like the old days where we walked all the time.
I'm with you.
And carried our books in a leather strap over our shoulder with our lard bucket and went to school.
Lard bucket?
Yeah. Isn't that what Little House on the Prairie, Laurie Ingalls, had, a lard bucket?
Well, yeah. Anyway, we do have something big going on here, and hopefully I can get this up here on the Commodore 64, but if not, we'll rely on you to kind of set the table for us as I get the audio going. You're a fan of Shark Tank, right?
I've watched it. I wouldn't say that I'm a fan of it. I've seen it.
I love Shark Tank. In fact, I watch the reruns on CNBC.
Mm-hmm.
And we even named the hot list after one of the sharks, Mark Cuban, because he said something unfortunate concerning race. Have you heard about the Mark Cuban comments?
Oh, yeah.
And basically what he's talking about is that, you know, we all have our prejudices. And when he's talking about the prejudices... You know, he basically says when he sees a black kid with a hoodie, he goes across the street. He sees a white guy with tattoos, he goes across the street.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just how it is. And now no one's coming to his defense. Everybody's saying, well, he's just like Donald Sterling. And what kind of got me, let's see if he says this here.
I learned a long time ago, you can't, you know, talking, not from action, but you can't beat stupid out of people. You know, you can't.
All right, we'll get to him in a minute. However, I'm amazed that no one has come to Cuban's defense.
I think people are afraid right now. I mean, there was a morning show, and I think it was, you know, a wacky FM zany morning show that made comments about a transgender back on the East Coast who are now looking for work today, that they were let go from their job for giving their comment. You have Mark Cuban, who is
being chased. They said, quote, so I don't, people don't think that I said it, you know, the state was going to pay for transgendered benefits, and they said, quote, they should see psychiatric care because you'd have to be nuts to do that. By the way, here is Mr. Cuban. Let me see here. Hopefully my cueing skills are the best ever, so here we go.
I know I'm bigoted in a lot of different ways. You know, and I've said this before, if I see a black kid in a hoodie at night on the other side of the street, I'm probably going to walk to the other side of the street. If I see a white guy with a shaved head and lots of tattoos, I'm going back to the other side of the street, right? If I see anybody that looks threatening, you know, probably chances are there's part of me that takes into account race and gender and age. You know, I'm prejudiced. But other than safety issues, I try to always catch my prejudices and recognize and be very self-aware that, you know, my stream of thought is never perfect, and I've got to be careful. And
I inadvertently hit the button, but you get the gist there.
And he's being chased with pitchforks down the road now.
And I was listening to Tony Kornheiser and Mike Wilbon, and they said
that's your fault.
And they were talking about how Tony Kornheiser said, "Well, LeBron James should have saved him. LeBron James, Adam Sterling, somebody else should have come in and saved him, and nobody has." And Wilbon's argument was they don't need to because Mark Cuban's record on race relations is not questioned. But at 580 KIDO, if you can't say a black kid in a hoodie without Trayvon Martin, what does that mean?
Well, the term hoodie now has become racist.
Well, okay. Now I'm going to really, again, for security guard Mike, for Nolan, for the young lady from Albertsons, our audience of three at 580KIDO in the morning, for our boss who's listening right now on his way to boot camp, Mark Cuban, A, was honest, but B, you've seen me in a hoodie, and our boss has called me an Oompa Loompa in a hoodie. So, I mean, what's the difference between Kevin Miller wearing a hoodie and anybody else wearing a hoodie?
Okay, if you're called an Oompa Loompa because you're in a hoodie, somehow that's offensive to me that they would call you that. Isn't that offensive?
He called me that in front of everybody in our meeting. Remember that?
I don't.
Our promotions meeting goes, Kevin, I'm sorry, but you with that hood on, you look like an Oompa Loompa.
Hmm.
And his intent wasn't to offend, and everybody goes, like the little evil monkeys in The Wizard of Oz.
Those are flying monkeys.
Yeah. Well, they were evil, too, though.
Which I don't know that you can say that either.
Flying monkeys?
I don't know, Kev. I don't know.
Back to Cuban, and let me just say this real quick. At 580KIDO, I used to work with a guy. His name was Crazy J. And Crazy J was like half African-American, half Samoan. And he goes, yeah, I'm black. Yeah, I'm this. I'm a N, and you need to call me the N. And I go, I ain't calling you the N. And then his boss, Bobo the Evil Clown, that's my N. I'm your N. And then they got in a fight, and then he goes, racism, racism, racism. I go, aha, you can't say that word. Now, I think no one should say that word, just out of good taste. You brought up the Jay-Z issue.
Yeah.
About having an all-black party.
Whites were turned away at the door.
This, and I predicted this, is why I'm with you, Dave Burnett, lucky you, that the president, unfortunately, has made the situation worse by highlighting race concerning every disagreement. I would love for the president to go back and say, when someone say, well, it's race, Eric Holder, it's race because I'm black. No, we're above that in America today. But no, nobody does, and now Mark Cuban's swimming with the sharks, maybe with the fishes.
Yeah, I'm not worried about Mark as far as financially. He'll be fine. But again, he just spoke his mind, and And I don't know that it's not a thought that a lot of black people or white people haven't had.
Now,
I mean, if you're a young black guy and there's a, you know, there's white guys with shaved heads, you're going to go across the street and avoid it.
You don't want to hear this. You don't want to hear this, but this is a fact. You look at the statistics when you're talking men 18 to 34, the people that are incarcerated, they're predominantly African American. You talk about a certain percentage of the population, but the entire percentage of people incarcerated. Now, people will say that's racism. On the other hand, you look at the violence in Chicago, the shootings that are ignored in Atlanta, Georgia, the black and white crime that is underreported. You could say the Cuban wasn't wrong, but arguing the statistic game. Now, what are you going to do?
I don't know. I just as you read through the news headlines, I mean, between comments about people of alternate lifestyles or people of diverse colors, it's like there's an all-out assault on.
And then you go back to a young African-American professional that was offended by Cuban's comments because when he's not around, he's lumped into the hoodlum category because of his race. It is, again, just like a lot of things in life, you need someone, and it can't be a white guy, unfortunately. I've carried that banner. I've gone toe-to-toe with the NAACP. But you need someone to say, you know something, let's just take a deep breath.
Exactly.
And talk about the greatness of America. And I love it when, you know, you've lived in countries where you were the minority. I've lived in cities where I was the minority. I lived in neighborhoods where I was the minority.
Mm-hmm.
Went to an all-black high school in New Orleans. It changed my perspective on race forever.
It does. I mean, I lived in a country where I was a minority, and when you walk in and people all look at you because of your skin color, it does make you think differently. I mean, it does give you a different perspective on the world.
I think you really want to get along. That's what people should do. I think everybody should be required to do that.
Okay.
Go somewhere where they're a minority.
Well, right now I'll tell you how you can do that. You can take the highway. Because traffic now, Kevin, as you're coming out of camp.
Ramsey, weekdays noon till 3 on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
558, Kevin Miller in the morning. Coming up next, our great friend Nagmeet Abedini will join us. We'll get her thoughts on Pastor Saeed, the power of prayer, what we can do to help her out. Gary Rainey will join us, Sheriff Ada County, coming up in the 8 o'clock hour. We'll take your phone calls on a variety of issues here at 580KIDO. Let's get you to work safely. 559, we will also take a look at the controversial comments, a listen to the comments concerning Dallas Mavericks owner, star of Shark Tank, Mark Cuban, and talking about our own bias. Look, we've got enough problems, don't we? I mean, truly, don't we have enough problems? The economy, the foreign powers that are against us. Race is a secondary issue. Or is it? Let's discuss.